Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
The removal of Dion George as Minister of the Fisheries, Forestry and Environment Department has been attributed to a variety of causes, some weird and possibly salacious, but most importantly has been the fact that he has not done the job that he is required and mandated to do, was required and mandated to do at the department, and that pertains particularly to in the area of conservation. And he seems to be supported in the media by journalists and commentators who feel that animals have rights, and that there must be no, it must not be a measure, any measure of commercial gain to be made in the area, the in the area of conservation, and they shouldn't be essentially commodities to be traded. But so to discuss what the mandate of the department and of the minister is, and how he was failing to follow that mandate, I have with me seasoned journalist and commentator Ivo Vechter. Ivo, welcome to the program, and perhaps can you tell us what it was that Dion George was doing versus what it was he should have been doing with regard to the progression of conservation in this country?
Good morning, Sarah. A lot of what was in the media was came down to sort of personal issues. There was were allegations against Dion George that John Steenhuisen claims to have received, and then Dion George made counter accusations against John Steenhuisen, and this all probably has a lot to do with upcoming elections, leadership elections in the DA. Mm-hmm. But a lot of journalists were saying that the change from Dion George to Willie Oukamp is almost a sort of Trojan horse for the wildlife trade lobby.
Mm-hmm.
So they were very much on the side of Dion George and the way that he conducted himself as environment minister, and are very much opposed to replacing him with Willie Oukamp. Now, you know, Don Pinnock said that it's about the soul of environmental governance in South Africa. And he is actually right. It is about the soul of environmental governance in South Africa. These writers are opposed to the notion of sustainable use. Mm-hmm. You know, one of them said, you know, that Daily Maverick readers are used to hearing the phrase sustainable use tossed around as a political magic spell, mm-hmm. a way to make any form of exploitation sound rational and green. Well, that's not actually true. Sustainable use is a concept that has been part and parcel of international conservation policy ever since 1980, since the conservation, the World Conservation Strategy. It has been adopted in every single United Nations and related biological diversity treaty ever since then, treaties which South Africa has signed and ratified. It is contained in our constitution.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in our constitution, it says everyone has the right to have the environment protected for the benefit of present and future generations, i.e. people,
mm-hmm.
through reasonable legislative and other measures that promote conservation and secure ecologically sustainable development and use of natural resources. So sustainable use is a constitutional right.
Mm-hmm.
It sits at the heart of our environmental law, you know, the National Environmental Management Act.
Mm-hmm.
It states that its purpose is, among other things, to provide for the sustainable use of indigenous biological resources. Now, this is where you have a complete divergence of views between people who think that the environment exists for its own sake and needs to be preserved for its own sake, and that the protection of species involves the right to life of every member of that species. So animals have inherent rights, according to this view. The other view is that the environment is a resource that needs to be managed, that needs to be protected for future generations, but needs to serve human prosperity and human welfare.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the distinction and the dichotomy that happened. So when Dion George said things like he's going to close down all so-called captive lion operations. And you know, he was speaking from an animal rights perspective. He said that he was implementing the policies of the DA, which is true, but that was not his mandate. His mandate was to implement policies that are consistent with South African law, the South African Constitution, and South Africa's international treaty obligations.
Now, I mean, it seems to me that it's very much that dichotomy between left and center, the one based on beliefs and the innate goodness of people to do the right thing all the time. And the reality it faces is you have a largely rural population that is in that lives and is borders areas where conservation of animals particularly has to take place. And unless there's some there are financial incentives, there are ways of being employed in order to boost the continued existence, let's say, or the safety of such animal populations, they're essentially likely to be whittled away through illegal hunting, through poaching, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, is this essentially what we're being faced with, this inability to see the practicalities of our human reality?
No, that's exactly right. I mean, just to take the lion example, you know, they talk about canned hunting, and it does happen on a minority of game farms. But the environmentalists will always show you the worst examples. You know, they'll show you a picture of a poor lion that's mistreated in a cage or whatever, as if this is representative of the entire industry, which it is not. There are about 8,000 lions, what environmentalists call in captivity. But by that they mean 8,000 lions on game farms and on private game reserves. Okay. Right, these can be quite large reserves. What they mean by that is every lion that is not in a national park, they consider to be captive or caged. Now, the policy that Dion George had was to close down all of those operations, to prohibit all of them from selling products derived from lions, like lion bones, and to euthanize these 8,000 lions.
Well, there's conservation for you.
Yeah. Now, to put 8,000 in perspective, there are only 3,000 animals, 3,000 lions in the wild in South Africa, in national parks. And those parks are at their carrying capacity. So South Africa cannot accommodate more than 3,000 really wild, truly wild lions. So 8,000 is a lot of animals that you want to euthanize in order to shut down a business that people have an emotional problem with. It's not a rational problem, and the consequence of this is going to be quite dire. There's about 3/4 of South Africa's land under game, and in fact 3/4 of South Africa's head of game exists outside of national parks. Right, in 1960-65 that number was zero. Right. It is now 3/4 of all South African game and land under game exists outside national parks in private, on, you know, private game ranches, private game farms, game reserves. Now, that land has several uses. You know, land always has several possible uses. A small amount of that land is suitable for tourism, ecotourism. Right. About 5% of the game ranching industry's revenue comes from ecotourism. The rest comes from live trade in animals, hunting for biltong, and hunting for sport. Now, the largest part is domestic hunters, and they mostly hunt for the pot. Now, that revenue keeps that land under game. The alternative is for landowners to say, well, you know, these animals are not paying for themselves. I cannot keep pouring millions into, you know, keeping these animals alive at my expense. So they're going to turn around and they're going to change that back into cattle ranches or crop farming, you know, monoculture crop farming, depending on where the farms are located. You know, if you have a farm in the Northwest Province, well, that's not on the beaten tourist track. You're not going to, you either hunt on that farm and keep game on that farm, or you turn it into a cattle ranch. You know, you grow maize or whatever they grow in the Northwest Province. So these have very real consequences. So sustainable use really means not only ecologically sustainable, but also economically sustainable. Mm. The conservation has to be economically sustainable. And this is what people like Dion George don't understand. Mm. And the journalists that support him, they don't understand that. Willie Okomp does understand. Mm-hmm. He is a game rancher himself. He farms with a whole lot of animals, all the way from chickens up to buffalo. You know, yeah. So he really does understand the relationship between game ranching, hunting, and conservation, and what needs to happen to make that industry successful in order to keep a lot of land in South Africa under game the way it is now, mm-hmm. and keep developing that as an industry.
Mm-hmm. Now, I assume that the population, as I said, around in areas of private game reserve or private farms or reserves relies considerably, or is helped in employment by the existence of these entities. To what extent does the existence of these farms and of these reserves help ameliorate unemployment? And what are the responses? How do the people who live in the areas then respond to the need to conserve rather than use them as resources because they desperately need food or trading with animals some way to make a living and to sustain themselves?
Look, the relationship between local communities and game ranchers varies, of course, depending on the game ranch involved, depending on how these things are actually managed. The best models, employ local communities, and they pay considerably more than these people could earn on a livestock farm.
Okay. Oh, that's interesting. Okay.
You know, livestock farm are minimum wage jobs, and they are the minimum wages on farms are considerably lower than the minimum wages in any other job. Mm-hmm. Right, so agricultural jobs are really the lowest of the low in terms of income.
Right.
Jobs on wildlife ranches are paid considerably higher than that. I've heard something like 2 to 3 times higher than what you could get on an agricultural farm. So that makes a huge difference to the local community. A lot of these farms also have relationships with the local communities in that they then sell off meat and other products that are the byproducts of hunting to the local communities, you know, at discount rates. There's an example in Zimbabwe. It's you know, I don't have one in South Africa at hand, but in Zimbabwe there's an old cattle ranch that was completely rewilded over the last 40 years or so. It now sustains all of the big five. Because Zimbabwe is not exactly a tourist destination, it makes no money from tourism. It makes all its money from hunting. Mm-hmm. It is an amazing rewilding project. I think it's the largest or second largest game reserve in Zimbabwe right now. And it supplies all of the local communities around that area with bushmeat at very good prices. Mm-hmm. So it's a perfect model of how hunting a small number of animals actually sustains the conservation of large areas of land and many other species. Many other species in South Africa have been brought back from the brink of extinction. You know, Bontebok, roan, antelope, sable, antelope. A lot of those animals now exist and exist in great numbers on private game ranches. And they were really near extinction back in the 60s. And they've been brought back by private ranching and hunting. The white rhino itself was brought back from the brink of extinction by trading, giving the animals value. So, you know, giving property rights in these animals and hunting them. And it's been very successful. It brought them back from a very small number in the mid 20th century to around about 20,000 animals now. Mm. A lot of them living on private game reserves. So to look at the private game reserve industry and say, well, you know, they must all be judged by the actions of a small number that mistreat their animals, that's not logical. You know, that's like going to a livestock farm and saying, well, here's a farmer that mistreats his animals, therefore all livestock farms need to be shut down. That makes no sense. And to look at it and say it contributes nothing to conservation, that's also misleading, because, you know, yeah, sure, they're not the Kruger Park, you know. They're not the apex of or the acme of conservation, but they certainly contribute to keeping species, you know, alive. Yeah. And I'm talking about entire ecosystems alive on private land. So, do you want to kill off 2/3 or 3/4 of South Africa's head of game and turn that all over to crop farming and livestock farming? Or do you want to preserve that? If you want to preserve that, you need to have policies in place that support sustainable use. Mm-hmm. And that's what Dion George was not doing and what Willie Oakham does promise to do.
Okay. So would that include, would the whole concept of sustainable use include, for example, the sale of rhino horn on a legal basis? Because that's, you know, one of those emotional touchstones is the poaching of rhinos for their horns.
Yes, it certainly would. And it's interesting, there was a High Court decision recently that actually ruled that South Africa, that the CITES rules about international trade in rhino horn, which permits international trade in rhino horn, mm-hmm. do apply to South Africa. Excuse me. So, you know, again, when Dion George came into office, he immediately said, well, we're not going to trade right on. There are huge stockpiles of rhino horn sitting in South Africa.
Right.
That's just dead capital.
Right.
You know, that could be paying for a lot of conservation. John Hume is currently facing charges over selling rhino horn. He sunk, I don't know, over 150 million or something of his own money into preserving rhino, white rhino. You know, he had a herd of 2,000. He was the biggest rhino owner in South Africa. He's getting old. He wanted to retire. He wanted to get rid of this this farm. He needed to sell it off. There were no buyers. So, you know, what is he going to do? This is a huge problem. And it absolutely, you know, there's so many misleading arguments in that selling rhino horn is going to stimulate demand and cause more poaching.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it doesn't. It does the exact opposite. It satisfies demand and therefore reduces poaching, because people who want rhino horn would far rather get it on the legal market at reasonable prices than having to fund, you know, criminal poaching operations involving helicopters and automatic assault rifles and risking being nabbed by the police on top of it.
Mm.
You know, it's like saying, well, you know, sheep are farmed for their wool.
Mm.
So, you know, now because we sell wool, this just stimulates demand and it causes poaching of sheep. Well, no, it doesn't, you know. I mean, there is a little bit of sheep poaching going around, but not on the level of rhino poaching or elephant poaching. These things are poached because they are illegal.
Mm.
If there were a legal outlet for these products, then, you know, the market would look completely different and there would be a lot less poaching.
Right. Just to go back to hunting, I would presume that although it's not the majority market, the overseas demand for hunting, particularly from a country like America, which has a reasonable hunting community, should be a very attractive. South Africa should be a very attractive destination for attracting sort of conservation tourism dollars.
Absolutely, you know, this should be just as important in the portfolio of both the Environment Minister and the Tourism Minister. As ecotourism is in South Africa.
Mm.
You know, it's we're an excellent hunting destination. We've got great lodges that, you know, provide world-class service. And we've got a lot of animals that are thriving on private game ranches. So, you know, these populations, we're not talking about endangered populations here. We're talking about populations that are perfectly sustainable.
Mm-hmm.
So, absolutely, this is a way to bring tourism dollars into South Africa, and it should be exploited as such.
Mm.
This is a commercial opportunity. Again, as we're talking, if we're talking sustainability, We're talking both environmental sustainability and economic sustainability.
Right.
South Africa needs all the tourism dollars it can get, and that includes hunting. Mm. I mean, look, I don't understand hunting. Mm. You know, I've never shot an animal, and I wouldn't shoot an animal. You know, I don't understand the appeal of hunting, but it does appeal to people, and I do recognize that it plays a very important role in funding these farms, these game farms that keep so much of South Africa's land under game and relatively wild,
mm.
as opposed to reducing it to, you know, dust bowls with cattle ranches.
Right. Well, Ava, thank you very much for joining us, and more power to Willie Oakham's elbow in this regard. Thank you.